Good evening.
Why is he here?
Good evening, ladies and
gentlemen, and welcome to the Tuesday, October 6th, Carrboro Board of Aldermen meeting. Before we begin our regularly printed agenda, we'll receive requests from visitors and speakers from the floor on matters that are not already on our printed agenda. I think the people I have signed up here are signed up to speak on matters that are on our agenda, unless Brian Voice, did you have? You're on the agenda.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Is there anyone here who wanted to speak on a matter not on the agenda? Yes, Alan Perry, come on up. Mr. Attorney, could you turn? Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Brian. And then.
Board members, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I have a bunch of questions that I'd like to leave with the board's permission with the town staff that relate back to when I was here in August. We were talking about livestock raising, and subsequent to that, we've had the issue of livestock slaughtering in Carrboro come up. And a number of people have come up to me, and quite frankly, I don't have the answer to these questions. So if the town staff could develop these answers, it would be helpful, I think, to citizens. My first question, for example, is how does the citizen check to see if there are any livestock raising restrictions or livestock slaughtering restrictions controlling their property or controlling their neighbor's property? Is there any kind of database or map or any assistance that they can get on that? Is there any model deed language that they can have to put onto their property, or if they want to do something in their homeowners association, something that can give them some guidance? And then the one question that I really don't have an answer to is how does a citizen enforce these restrictions? Say they exist. Who do they go to? Do they have to sue their neighbor? Do they go to animal control? How do they handle it? I don't know, and I think it would be helpful for people to know these things. Since I was here, we had an urban farm tour, and I was heard in the media that the town, I believe I heard right, the town has no provisions controlling animal slaughtering. But I do also want to leave with the board and the town staff a notice that comes from the Department of Agriculture, which does have provisions on home slaughtering. And I note that in reading their provisions, you can slaughter animals on your property for your family, for your guests. You do so on your property for consumption there. But they do require you to get rid of the inedible slaughter parts one of two ways. You can take it to a licensed rendering plant, or you can dig a hole in your property. But the hole has to be 3 foot deep, and it has to be 300 feet from a flowing stream or a public body of water. So I would think that perhaps we may have to have a map made up that would guide people to know where on their property they can do this legally to comply with the state regulations. So I'd ask that you to look at that as well. And that's it.
Okay, is there a motion to refer those questions to the staff for a written response?
I'll move that.
Second.
Been moved and seconded.
But I'd like to add that in the response, would you please give some clarification about the homeowners associations? Because I believe that if it's against the homeowners association's regulations, then the town ordinance does not override that. Is that true, Mike?
That's correct.
So if the homeowners say you can't have livestock, then it's not true that if you live in a neighborhood with a homeowners association that you can. That's just simply not true. So.
Yeah,
okay.
That's what I gathered from the last meeting.
Right.
The town attorney spoke indicating that.
Right.
But some people are saying, you know, what is the type of language I should be looking for? And then also, that last question of enforcement, how do I go about enforcing this?
Well, we can certainly address that last point right now. If you're looking to enforce an animal control ordinance issue in the town of Carrboro, you would contact the Carrboro Police Department. We have an animal control officer.
Okay, great.
Okay, thanks very much. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, the matter passes unanimously. Thanks very much. Ellen Perry.
I just got appointed to the Alliance for Full Participation.
This is a national group which will hold a conference in 24 months. And I am on the North Carolina Conference Committee.
Great.
Nice.
So I thought I'd come up here and tell you all.
Well, we're very proud of you, as always.
And one other thing. Rain, my Real Advocates County Marching, could use some money. I mean, I know that we don't have much money, but
well, you know, you could really encourage them to apply for our human services.
But we don't have a 501c3.
Oh.
So that's tricky.
That is tricky.
Yeah.
Well.
And we'll talk later.
Okay. All right. All right.
Thanks
very much.
Thank you.
All
right. Congratulations.
Okay. Before we turn to the consent agenda, I want to point out that I understand we've received a request from the permit applicants for the Goddard School, a proposed Goddard School at the Winmore subdivision, request from them to continue the public hearing from tonight to November 17th. So that they'll have the opportunity to meet with the planning board sometime during the next month. Is there a motion to continue that agenda item?
Second.
All right. It's been moved and seconded that it be continued to November 17th. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? The matter passed unanimously. So I'm sorry for the inconvenience to any of you who may have come to speak on that item tonight, but the good news is you will. We'll have the opportunity to be heard. It'll just be on another night. All right. We'll take that up November 17th. Mr. Manager, if you could present the consent agenda for us.
Okay. Item 1 is approval of minutes of the previous meeting of September 22nd. Item 2 was a request to amend Chapter 10, Article 3, Livestock and Wild Animals of the Town Code. Item 3 is a request from Transition Carborough Chapel Hill for the in-kind use of the Century Center and equipment on May 13th and May 15th, 2010. Item 4 is a request to make an appointment to the Appearance Commission. Item 5 is a request to cancel the board meetings of October 27th and November 3rd. Item 6 is a request to make an appointment to the Greenways Commission. Item 7 is a request to make appointments to the Environmental Advisory Board. Item 8 is a request to make an appointment to the Transportation Advisory Board. Item 9 is a request to adopt an ordinance amending the town code to remove the public hearing requirements before closing streets for the Kidney Care 5K and a request to adopt a resolution authorizing the closing of streets for the 2010 Kidney Care 5K. Item 10 is a request to approve a budget amendment to receive the Edward Byrne Memorial Justice Assistance Grant. And item 11 is a request to approve a budget amendment for a Section 319 grant for watershed restoration.
Mark, I have a question about number 2.
Okay, let's identify which ones we are not going to pass as part of the consent agenda, and then we'll go through them. Okay.
I have a question about number 3.
I have a question about number 3 as well.
Okay, so 2 and 3. Is there a motion for items 4 through 11 on the consent agenda?
So moved.
And
1.
And 1.
And 1? Sorry, I missed that.
Second.
Oh, and 1, yes. One, that's a part of the motion, yes. 1 1 and 4 through 11 have been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, the matter passes unanimously. On consent agenda item number 2.
Just a quick question. So the Homeowners Association on the common area and the use of the common area for gardening and livestock. I just want to know if, you know, where you've got livestock, unlike a garden, if some need arises, is there a point person? How is that addressed?
The Cedars has been working long and hard on this, and they're very well organized and ready to go. And they have several point people.
Go ahead.
Well, I don't know if staff wants to respond to that as well, but there was also an additional issue that Bob emailed us about today. Did you see that email?
I looked at it, and I don't have any problem with it. I mean,
mean, I think it's a good suggestion.
The suggestion was basically to require that with the permit application, the applicant show that the homeowners association had indeed, you know, signed off on just documenting that through the minutes of the homeowners association.
I think the Cedars would agree with that, don't you?
I think it's a good idea.
He adds, you know, where it says, on a common open space area within a residential development, he adds, with the written permission of the owner of such common space and accompanied by a copy of association minutes reflecting the approval decision, adds that language, and I think that's a good.
I think that makes a lot of sense.
Yep.
Excellent, thank you.
Okay, so is there a motion then maybe for this proposed amendment with Bob's language incorporated into?
Second.
All right, it's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, passed unanimously. Item.
I'd like to ask that staff communicate that tomorrow to Susan. At the Cedars.
They're eager, huh?
Yes, they're very eager.
They have received their chickens in the mail?
No, they have not gotten their chickens in the mail.
Because that's how they're put.
I know my husband's been researching chickens, unfortunately.
We're all vegetarians in the group. That's
Item C3. By the way, I should mention, speaking of vegetarians in the group, Alderman Coleman's not feeling well today. He's not able to join us, but. I'm not sure he really is a vegetarian, but anyway, it brought it to mind. Item C3.
We'll find out next week.
Request for in-kind use of the Century Center. Did you have a question about that?
I actually did, and I guess maybe it's more of a comment, and I'm not opposed to providing in-kind use of the Century Center. And I read the attachment and some information, but I think... you know, I'm just concerned that we may have more of these, and I think we need to, you know, I don't know if it's exactly town-sponsored under the definition of town-sponsored. So I'm just a little concerned that maybe after this one, I think I would want a little more. You know, I'm big on factors that would indicate, because I don't know if the board wants to have to, because y'all can do anything you want to after I'm gone, but these constantly coming up. It's sort of, to me, equal to the...
It's a problem.
You know, that's why we have the human services type application. So, I mean, that's just...
How do you ever say no?
Yeah, how do you ever say no? And so that would be my... sort of my comment about that.
Well, and that's the same reason I wanted it pulled also. And I agree with Joel. I mean, transition Carbro Chapel Hill looks great. I looked at the website. I know Tim. I mean, it's a very worthy cause to waive fees for, but I am concerned that, you know, we have guidelines for use of the Century Center, and I can't remember, but we may have profit, nonprofit. I know in some areas we do. Anita may be here. Is that right? Yeah. And so we already have some guidelines that differentiate between profit and nonprofit. And I for one, you know, I agree with Joel, but I think I'm going to vote against it just because I think we ought to stop it right now. I mean, a few weeks ago, we had an individual come in and want to plan a festival that, again, was a great festival. But without a co-sponsor or without the town being a co-sponsor, we get into a slippery slope where we kind of subjectively try to decide when to waive fees and when not to. So that's the reason I'll vote against it, not because I don't support the group at all. So
I'll tell you, Joel and Liddy, where I found this request to be different. Having served on the Greenhouse Gases Commission for the county and worked on the planning for events. This event, I think, helps Carbro move ourselves towards some of the action items that's in the county plan to address climate change. And I think between now and May, one of the things that could possibly happen is that we can work with this group to help advance you know, some of the goals that we have for for the town, because the plan has been made for the county. Carrboro certainly is well positioned to, you know, advance our own activities, and this could be part of that. And so I don't see it being separate from our goals. I see it being connected very fundamentally with our goals.
I understand. And if it were co-sponsored by the county or by that committee or by the town, it would be objective enough then for me to be able to vote that way. But I hear what you're saying.
I'm going to support this, but I'd also like to suggest that sometime relatively soon we revisit the waiver policy and how we make that decision, so that staff, us, and all the groups that want the space are kind of left-handed. We revisit it periodically. It's fine. So I'd like us to do that.
Okay.
Well, you know, my only other statement is, if we felt like it was important enough, of course, I don't know how much, you know, the waiving of it requires no money, but if the board felt that it was important enough, then my recommendation would be that we would, I mean, it would be like paying ourselves, but I don't know how much is in our reserve account, so we may not have any money. So that's why I said I'm not.
Well, it really would be taken out of one hand and putting it out because it's all,
right,
all general fund.
Right.
I think staff would like some guidance if we need to revisit, because the reason this is before you all is because, making a value judgment about the event itself, but it does not meet the current guidelines that spell out in some detail when an event is a town-sponsored event. So the question that I would have for you all, do you want the definition broadened or somehow changed? Because
I'm not asking staff to make any suggestions. I'm just asking it to be put on our agenda so we can discuss it.
So we can discuss it. Because I think we probably need to have a discussion about
I hadn't necessarily thought about the issues that y'all are raising, or at least not recently thought about the issues that we're raising. Can I suggest that could we put this off to our next meeting and we'll vote on it then? Would that be acceptable to people? Would you mind if we did it that way?
Okay.
Dan's not here, and I'm not. I need maybe just a little bit more time to think about the different points that y'all have raised.
Okay.
Fine. Would that be the October 20th meeting? That's the next regular meeting.
Okay. Is there a motion? Is there a motion to put this over to the October 20th meeting?
So moved.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, the matter passes unanimously. Thanks very much for giving me a little bit more time to consider the issues y'all have raised. That puts us, I believe, on item D1. We finished it. Item D1, a report from the Orange County Partnership for Young Children, Growing Healthy Kids.
Okay. I think Patrick McIntyre with the Community Development Director and Margaret Samuels, Executive Director of the Partnership, are here to give you all a report.
Good evening, everyone. Once again, I'm Patrick McIntyre from the Orange County Partnership for Young Children, and this is Margaret Samuels, our Executive Director. We're going to give you a very brief update on what is the Carrboro Growing Healthy Kids program, which is a community garden program that was started in 2007. The initial program was funded by a grant from the North Carolina Health and Wellness Trust Fund. The first two gardens were located at the future site of the Martin Luther King Jr. Park and the Carrboro Elementary School. Recently this spring, we started a third garden that is now located at James Street at the substation for Duke Energy. So we're very proud of that. That's another partner that we brought on, and they've been very supportive of this, and they helped us clear the land and till it, and we've got a really great garden that's going right there. The new aspect of the program that we've started was actually began last fall, and that's we've incorporated some of the garden that's going at the Carrboro Elementary with our Mort 4 program that's also being run out of Carrboro Elementary. So that's our garden coordinator, Maria Hitt, who will be coming up shortly. She's been working in the classrooms to bring children out into the garden and teach them the wonderful aspects of growing their own fruits and vegetables and things of that sort. The families that have been participating for both years in cooperation with the Orange Cooperative Extension, Orange County Cooperative Extension, have been taking part in the FNEP program, which I made the mistake of writing the acronym and not remembering what FNEP stands for. I don't know if anybody can help me out, but it's a
Maria might.
Yeah.
Expanded Foods and Nutrition Education Program.
There we go. But basically what it is, it's a healthy cooking preparation class that the families have been participating in, and we've had 100% participation in that from all families. Of course, a wonderful aspect of having a fun program like the Community Gardens is the additional activities that it supports. It's been nothing but a great opportunity for collaboration with a lot of different businesses and programs and organizations in this community. Recently, as of May 26, we had a garden workshop that was held in conjunction with the Carborough Farmers Market and the Kidzu Children's Museum. And there's a picture of it right there. It was held at Carborough Elementary School. And they got to go out into the garden, and it looks like it was raining. But that's a good thing for a garden, so I don't think anybody complained. Again, very well attended, and that was open to the public as well as the families that participate in the program. The potato event, again, a huge hit. The kids grew their own potatoes and then had the opportunity of getting in the kitchen and cooking them and cutting them up with supervision, and that was, again, very successful. And a couple of the other pictures are from a ribbon-cutting ceremony that we had with Duke Energy. There's a couple of our other pictures there. One bottom right there is of the recently retired Fletcher Barber from the Orange County Cooperative Extension. There's a couple other pictures. And I'm going to just give you a brief update on the numbers for the children participating in the Growing Healthy Kids program. Here you can see our demographics, a majority being Hispanic and Latino, and again, the majority also being low income. We've seen excellent progress with the children and the families that are participating as far as being more active, the amount and portions of fruits and vegetables that they're taking into their home on a weekly basis. So it's very encouraging, and you know, we will continue this program, obviously, with the great success that we've had already. So, and then, again, just to catch up real briefly, we have two other programs that participate in what is overall in a childhood obesity initiative here in Orange County, which is the Healthy Kids campaign. Another program that we've started is the Move It program, and that was just a scholarship program that we've collaborated with all three Parks and Recs and Recs and Parks departments in Orange County, Town of Chapel Hill, and Carborough. And we also partnered with the YMCA and the Triangle Sportsplex. The Triangle Sportsplex had not had a scholarship program up to this point, so that was a new program for them.
And Anita Jones's mayor helped us immeasurably on this project and was actually the first Parks and Recs and the first group to actually bring families on and participate with us. So
this is, I mean this to be funny.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Sure.
I'm really interested to see that 19% of the kids in the program earned more than $25,000 a year.
It was.
Where are the kids working? Where are these children working?
My kids need a job.
All I can say is it's all legal.
Probably you would want to say of the
families.
Of the families.
Absolutely.
We have child labor laws here.
Right.
So I think
my kid can make 25 grand.
Yeah, I'd let him work.
Yeah.
And again, very brief.
Work, you'll lose weight.
That's yes. Right.
I wouldn't be lying if I said we incorporated that into the program at the last minute. Our final program was the ABCs of Good Health, which we're working in conjunction with the Orange County Health Department, and that sends a nurse into child care centers, a dietitian, and they actually have, it's based on a curriculum called NAPSAC, which I do know that acronym, and it's Nutrition and Physical Self-Assessment Child Care Centers. And that is basically, like I just said, a curriculum that you go into the child care centers, you work with the teachers, and the results of that being if the teachers know how to better prepare food that they're serving in the child care centers, and they have regulated playtime during their outdoor activities, that you'll see an increase in, obviously, better nutrition and physical activity. And the final thing is...
We're going to ask Maria and Denise and Matthew, some of our families, to come up for just 1 minute. And Maria's going to quickly speak about our expansion of families at the MLK site here and our wonderful collaboration with the town.
Thanks so much for having us this evening. We invited our families to come. A lot of the kids just kind of passed their bedtime.
But I want to ask Denise Blanco Ayala to speak for a minute. She has prepared a little statement she wants to make. Denise and her family were one of the first families to start with us at our Martin Luther King site. They've been gardening with us for about a year and a half now, and have been having a really good time. So, Denise, do you want to speak in the microphone?
Come up to the mic so everybody can hear
and
you.
And then everybody will be able to hear you, Denise.
It's okay, sweetie.
She's a little nervous. Ready? You can just say right in there.
Hi, my name is Denise. I'm from the Martin Luther King Jr. Garden. What I like about the garden is getting dirty.
Very nice. Okay.
Thanks. Very nice.
And Matthew, you
want to
say a few words about your participation? Matthew's another one of our garden families.
And my name's Matthew Arnsberger, and I also garden at the Martin Luther King Garden with my daughter, Flora. I appreciate the gardens because it is a very much of a community building enterprise. In addition to families having their own separate plots, we participate in doing many activities as a group, whether it's mulching the paths. We also have we built a sandbox that's made out of loosened soil so that the toddlers have a place to play, and that seems to be a big hit. There's a little water garden there with goldfish that the kids sometimes feed. And there's a bean teepee and other exciting things that we've put together as a group. And so, we've also built birdhouses too. We had a nice event, one of our potlucks that we built a bunch of birdhouses and painted them too.
All right.
Thanks.
Thanks, Matthew.
Sure. Margaret asked me to just speak real briefly, and I just want to really thank Matthew and Sarah and her Denise and her mom, Sarah, for coming out tonight. Matthew's been really a great proponent of the garden. We've been really happy to have him and his family as part of it because he also has all kinds of knowledge about gardens. We did get a new grant, which Margaret's going to talk about in a second, and we are in the process of expanding our garden over at Martin Luther King. It's going to be our largest garden in Carrboro of our three gardens. We're about to double the size of it. We were out there working on Sunday. The original agreement that we had with Carrboro was to utilize the entire front space in conjunction with the Carrboro Community Garden Coalition, and so we're going to be expanding our kids' garden, adding 15 more family parcels, and we are in the process of recruiting more families, and there'll still be some room. We're sharing still room with CCGC. They're going to be putting in some fruit trees. So we're all excited about this expansion and being able to bring more families on board. And there are plenty of families lining up that really want to garden. It's very exciting, particularly our immigrant community, both our Latino, and we have a number of families now from Burma that are gardening with us. So we have this wonderful opportunity for cross-cultural exchange, for the families to come out, be in the sunshine, grow some vegetables, kids get to try new things, and it's just really been a great project, and I just want to thank the town of Carrboro for helping support it.
Thank you.
And
the very last slide, just so you know, we've caught national attention in that we submitted a grant in conjunction with UNC and Frank Porter Graham to the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, who is partnering with Salute America to look at ways and different projects around the country that are working toward Latino families living healthier lifestyles. And we were one of 20 sites out of thousands of applicants from around the country that were chosen to evaluate our program because of our high participation of Latino families, close to 60%. So we'll be looking at that over the next 2 years. And we wouldn't have gotten that grant without the help of Carrboro and the community of Carrboro, the families, our alderman, Anita, and all of those that have helped us on this garden. So thank you very, very much.
All right. Thank you all. Congratulations on
thank
that.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's great.
I serve on the board of directors of the Orange County Partnership for Young Children, and this is a project that I think I know the whole board is very the board of the partnership is very proud of. I think I would just like to point out that Many folks may know the partnership as an organization that works with our various state subsidy programs for helping low-income families to afford early childhood education, preschool, that type of thing. But the organization's mission is considerably broader than that, and we're working toward promoting health among young children as they enter school. As Governor Hunt used to say, they need to be healthy and ready to learn. And anyway, this is a great example of the kind of cutting-edge thing that we're doing. People all over, our counterpart organizations all over the state constantly look at the Orange County Partnership for Young Children as a model for things that they ought to be doing. And this program is certainly no exception. So
Thank you all. And thanks for your support.
All right. Mr. Manager, item D2 or 3.
Thanks. You might want to consider that resolution.
Oh, I'm sorry. We have resolution. Is there a motion for
the moved.
Second.
All right. Resolution has been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed. The matter passes unanimously. Item D3, the long-range transit plan for Chapel Hill.
This is the final draft of the long-range transit plan for Chapel Hill Transit. The presentation is scheduled so that the board can receive information about and discuss the plan. There is a resolution referring the plan for public comment and for advisory board review. And that is recommended for the board's adoption. I know we have Steve Spade and David Bonk with the town of Chapel Hill, and I'm not sure. David, are you going first? Okay.
While David's coming up to the microphone, I'll just point out that Alderman Coleman texted me to say that he is indeed a vegetarian.
If he's well enough to watch the meeting.
Maybe we are eating when he gets sick.
His son, however, is a bacon.
There you go.
There's it's all soy. No.
No. Yeah, I mean, soy
don't
bacon.
Don't you give Nisha soy bacon.
Yeah. What is that? They shouldn't even call that bacon. Because it's
evening.
Not.
I'm David Bonk. I'm the manager of long-range and transportation planning for the town of Chapel Hill, and it was my distinct pleasure to be the project manager for the development of the Chapel Hill Carborough long-range transit plan. Steve Spade, the transit director, is here tonight also, and he will pick up where I leave off as part of this presentation. What I want to do tonight, as the mayor suggested, is to summarize very briefly the conclusions of the long-range transit plan. This is an effort that was a collaborative process between the town of Chapel Hill, the town of Carborough, and the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. All were financial participants and also participated regularly as part of a policy oversight committee on which Dan Coleman served. Mayor Chilton also attended some of those meetings. That group, by and large, led the effort, directed the consultant, made decisions as we went through the process on certain policy decisions that needed to be made at that time that the consultant put forward. So tonight I want to summarize the long-range transit plan, the objectives, to talk a little bit about the assumptions, recommendations, and the status of the plan, and also talk a little bit about next steps. When the plan first began, the policy committee, working with the consultant, established a series of objectives. Those objectives included defining to the year 2035, the market for transit services within the Chapel Hill Carborough area, to develop transit service concepts, prepare supportive land use policies to go along with those service concepts, identify the high investment projects and recommend an implementation schedule for those projects, and finally, to develop a financial plan. The assumptions that underlie the development of the analysis include the premise that transit service will expand along major travel corridors within the Chapel Hill and Carborough service area, that future transit services will include a mix of both local bus as well as express and higher capacity transit technologies such as bus rapid transit, and finally, that there will be an expanded system of regional bus services that will support the further development of the Chapel Hill Carborough system, and these would include possible express bus routes throughout the region, and would also include the light rail corridor that has been proposed between Chapel Hill and Durham, extending on beyond that to Cary and into Raleigh through the RTP. I should point out at this stage, too, that the development of this plan was done in parallel with the development of the regional long-range transportation plan by the MPO and the work of the STAC group that looked at the possibility for regional transit services in a broad sense, and then did make recommendations to both of the MPOs, the Capital Area MPO and the Durham-Chapel Hill-Carborough MPO. So none of the recommendations in this plan tonight are in any way, shape, or form inconsistent with the plan that has been adopted by the Durham-Chapel Hill-Carborough MPO, and in fact has informed that process by and large. Jumping to recommendations, utilizing the population, employment, and travel data from the 2035 plan, the Chapel Carborough Transit Plan has developed a vision of the system out to the year 2035. We believe that the recommendations in this plan can form a framework that will allow the two towns and the university, who are partners in the system, to respond to future development, future growth in the community, and support that not only with transit service, but also with transit support of land use policies. The plan recommendations focus on a series of gateways that I'll talk about in a second that really are the entranceways into the community along major transit corridors. It provides for a higher order of transit service and expanded express bus, light rail, and bus rapid transit services in the community. I mentioned earlier the premise of gateways. The map that's on the screen right now really is a good summary of the final recommendations for high investment within the major transit corridors in the two communities. Each of the circles that are colored, 1 through 7, represent major entranceways, gateways into this community and to the university. And the analysis that's included in the report focuses on each of these gateways and what is the potential transit ridership that was projected to the year 2035, and based on that, what are the level of transit investments that are necessary to accommodate the travel demand that will exist at that point. As I mentioned earlier, the 2035 long-range transportation plan at a regional level formed the basis for this plan in a number of ways. One of those ways was that it used the same set of socioeconomic projections for land use in the future, jobs, housing, and population that were used at the regional level. So again, nothing inconsistent with these recommendations as it relates to that. With regard to the recommendations of the plan, in gateways 1, 3, and 4, the blue, the green, and the red, the plan recommends the implementation of a higher order system of transit. In the case of gateway 1 and 3, it's recommending a form of bus rapid transit serving the community from the north and from the northeast. In the case of gateway number 4, the plan accommodated the recommendations of the regional plan, which does include the provision for the light rail corridor between Chapel Hill and Durham, and that is represented in this plan by the dashed line, which you really see beginning at Gateway 3, running along I-40, and then turning to the west, coming into the Meadowmont area, serving Gateway 4, paralleling NC-54, and then into the main campus, to the main hospital area there. So those three corridors have been recommended for what is defined as the higher order level of transit in the report. Gateways 6, 7, 8, which include two gateways that are of interest to Carborough, the plan is recommending that a higher order of transit service, express service, higher frequency service, be implemented over time within those corridors to accommodate the anticipated future growth of the corridors themselves, but also the areas that they serve. So in the case of gateways 7 and 8, not only do they serve the corridors that were, are within Carver, but they also serve those areas to the west and to the northwest in Alamance County that we expect to grow into the future. And likewise, Gateway 6 not only serves southern Orange County, but also serves Chatham County.
I'm just trying to get clear here. So if somebody in Carborough, say in the northern area of Carborough, wanted to take a light rail to the airport mm-hmm. on this scheme, how many times would they have to transfer, and how long would it take them to get there?
Well, ideally, they would only have to transfer once. They would have to they would have to transfer once to get on the light rail system. They would be able to take a bus from Carborough into the university area, the hospital area, transfer mm-hmm. onto the light rail. The light rail would take them at this point, based on what we know, probably to the one of the stations in the park at RTP. Metro Center, and from there, discussions are currently underway as to what kind of connection should be made to the airport, whether that would be a extension of the rail system or some other type of thing. So,
wow, because I know now it can take quite a while to mm-hmm. get to the airport. I mean, I know it's 25 years in the future, but it's got to be convenient for it to work for people. And
well,
that doesn't sound
convenient.
Yeah,
your question was predicated on using light rail to get to the airport. We would hope at that point, because the light rail system goes up into Durham and then down back into the RTP, that probably is not the most direct way to get to the airport if you didn't want to drive. I would suspect that the development of these regional express services would also include a more direct route from the Chapel Hill-Carborough area directly into the to the airport, so you wouldn't necessarily be on the train at all.
In other words, because what's sort of anticipated, not as part of David's plan that he's presenting about, but outside of David's plan, what's anticipated is the Triangle Transit is going to expand both their rubber tire bus service and into a fixed guideway system, so that I think what David's trying to suggest is Triangle Transit would hopefully have some better connection from the university area to University of North Carolina area to the airport.
Right. Right now, you have to go to their transfer center at RTP, and service doesn't run on the weekends from the transfer center, so it's not very convenient at all.
No, it's not. But I think the key point of this slide is you're saying we're still, you know, our current transit system is a sort of all routes lead to Rome, where mm-hmm. UNC is Rome, and we're anticipating basically a very similar system in its overall layout, that it be focused on the university either as a destination or as a transfer point to other lines, mm-hmm. And when you say 7 and 8, because people at home surely cannot see those. No, I can barely see them.
Okay.
But 7 is basically the vicinity of Calvander.
Right.
And 8 is essentially where Carborough Plaza is. And so, David, clarify for us. So what would this would be basically express bus service from those type of vicinities into the center of the Central
yes.
Business District
and
the University.
To the core, you'll note that, and again, apologize for the washed out nature of the map, but from both corridor or entranceways 7 and 8, you'll note that from them emanate lines in the same color. And in the case of both 7 and 8, those lines move through downtown Carborough into downtown Chapel Hill and then to the university area. But there are also lines that extend from those gateways to the Carolina North area,
mm-hmm.
along Estes Drive up into this area. So those are the two main focal points of really all the gateway services, the core of Chapel Hill Carborough and the university, and then also the Carolina North development based on the premise that it will be a major center of employment in this community.
Or in any case, the transfer spot to whatever other form mm-hmm. of transportation mm-hmm. You're seeking out. I think it's also important, it's difficult to see on this map, but that route that would run from Carrboro Plaza over toward the university, as you've shown it there, it would travel mostly on the bypass and then up South Greensboro Street and through the very central part of downtown Carrboro. That is to say, what's anticipated is not express bus service directly down Main Street, West
right.
Main Street, the more somewhat more residential area of West Main Street.
Mm-hmm. Right. I should also make the point in looking at this map that, and I'll point out in a slide or two when we talk about the actual projected ridership within these corridors, the plan, one of the building foundations of the plan is the premise that travel, by and large, even though there will be a robust system of regional services, whether it's light rail, express bus, others, that the plan was based on at least the initial premise that transit trips from outside of the community would, in fact, by and large, be captured at the edge, at the fringe, through a series of park and ride lots. And then people would transfer from those lots onto the express buses or the BRT or the light rail and then continue their journey to their destination. So when I get to the slide that talks about the ridership, there's also a line in that slide that has a estimate of the number of park and ride spaces that need to be constructed in order to make this plan, in fact, work.
Bearing in mind that this is sort of schematic,
yes.
I assume. I mean, you're not saying it'd be right at the intersections.
No.
I just want to understand, David, that I think it's the teal color that's 8,
yes.
which is at,
mm-hmm.
at Carrboro Plaza.
This one?
Yeah, I'm wondering, by 2035, downtown Carrboro is already a major hub. Friday night's downtown Carrboro. I mean, I really want to be able to see that, we're working towards plans that really support the growth and development of our mm-hmm. downtown, and being able to get folks in and out of downtown on weekends.
Right.
And right now, that's not as strong as it can be. And the way this is set up, downtown Carrboro, which is a real lively downtown, by 2035, I would imagine it's going to be quite extensive. How does this meet that need or anticipated need?
Two responses. First of all, as the mayor indicated, this is schematic. And for us to be able to stand here in 2009 and even tell you what the transit network is going to look like in 5 years is somewhat problematic compared to 25 years. So I think that the point to be made is that as land use changes, as projected concentrations of employment and population evolve in the two communities, we're going to have to modify these routes
mm-hmm.
To respond to that. Second point is that this is just kind of the top edge of the transit service, the high-end service. And I have a slide that I'll get to in a second, which shows that there is an underlying expansion of the local system, the local routes, that has to go along with this to serve it.
Mm-hmm.
And I would suspect that, in part, that local route system will accommodate the growth that you're expecting in the downtown.
Okay.
And there it is. There, in fact, is the schematic, at least, of the local services that the consultant used as the kind of the underlying transit network, that on top of which they laid the more the higher order network. It's critical, and the recommendations in the report make it clear that not only should the two communities focus on developing those higher order systems, but they need to continue to maintain support for the local network. Without it, the higher order systems would never work. You have to have access to those systems. By and large, they're not designed to go out in the neighborhoods and collect people. They have to have collection points at which they will have people brought to them, and that's what the local system will do. This is the table I referred to earlier. I won't dwell on any single piece of it. The headings across the top reflect the gateways, starting with Gateway 1 through Gateway 8, and there are several iterations of some of the gateways that have different branches, which I can talk about if anyone is interested in it. Along the left is a description of the projected ridership based on two efforts that the consultant undertook. In the first line, you see Model Run. That was the effort the consultant undertook, to use the regional transportation model, which is used by the MPO and everyone else, and eventually will be used by the federal government if, in fact, we were to pursue federal financing of any of these projections or any of these projects. And you'll note that that model run gives us a certain amount of base ridership. It's suggesting that in the year 2035, we would have about 43,000 people riding the local bus system, and the grand total of 54,000. But one of the things that we recognized early on in this process, but it, actually we at the local level have realized it for several years, and that is the regional model is not set up to reflect the travel behavior of people who live and work in this community, primarily because it doesn't reflect the kind of parking policies that UNC has, which really is the prime motivator of transit ridership on a daily basis within the community. So the consultant looked at trying to estimate what is the parking, the transit ridership that would result from the parking deficit on the UNC main campus, and then extended that analysis to also deal with Carolina North. And the result is additional ridership that they've projected, so that the total amount of ridership they are projecting is approximately 99,000 riders a day. If this entire network system were put into place as recommended by the plan, if all the land use projections came to fruition, and that the parking assumptions actually occurred as they assumed in this. The bottom half of the table simply takes those daily ridership numbers and extrapolates them to an annualized basis. As I mentioned earlier, land use is a critical component of this plan. If the projected land use socioeconomic numbers that the consultant used to prepare the table prior to this in fact change, then that table changes. If the land use doesn't occur as projected, that will probably result in less ridership. If more development occurs than is projected, we'll have greater opportunity for ridership. You'll note on this map, these are the areas that the consultant looked at for possible development or redevelopment into the future. There are 20 total sites. Three of those sites, plus downtown Carrboro, are in Carrboro. And in fact, I believe the consultant working with the Carrboro staff actually did a conceptual plan for an area along Homestead Road for possible development as a transit supportive development. And they did one in Chapel Hill, one in Carrboro, and hopefully that kind of information can be useful to you as you move forward. So with that, let me turn this over to Steve Spade, who's going to talk about next steps in this process.
Thanks, David. Thank you for giving us time tonight. I wanted to do two things this evening. One is there's one of the types of service we're talking about is called bus rapid transit, which is kind of a new concept here, and we wanted to spend a minute explaining what that concept of service is, and then talk about next steps, which involves developing short-range transit plans that I think will answer a lot of the specific questions you had about the development of service. But first, let me talk a little bit about bus rapid transit. In the long-range transit plan, it was suggested that there would be three higher orders of transit that would be used in addition to the local bus service that we see every day. That would be express bus service, which I think we're all pretty familiar with. It's things like running out of Jones Ferry, the north-south route running out of Southern Village and the Friday Center Express, things like that. And then there's light rail, which is something I think we're all familiar with, which is a capital-intensive development. Bus rapid transit is the other concept that's being introduced here as something that would make some sense. And bus rapid transit as a service concept is somewhere in between the express bus service and light rail service. It actually utilizes the flexibility and lower capital cost of a rubber-tired bus service, but incorporates a lot of the characteristics and operating characteristics of light rail, to make the service more effective and more efficient. This is a definition taken out one of the federal documents, but what bus rapid transit really is a more flexible but high quality, high frequency service operating in corridors to really create a transit-intensive corridor. These are some of the characteristics of bus rapid transit. And I think many of you may have seen the articulated buses that we have operating in town. That's kind of the typical vehicle that you see operating in a bus rapid transit system. It's a larger vehicle that has capacity for much easier boarding and alighting of passengers. They've usually got three doors, and they're much wider than the normal. And they obviously carry a larger number of people. The service would also have a higher capacity, or I'm sorry, higher frequency service. Today's bus service that you see might operate every 15 minutes during the rush hour, maybe every 30, 40, or 60 minutes during the off-peak. This type of service would operate at a minimum every 10 minutes during the rush hour, probably offer 20, 25, 30-minute service during the off-peak, but also have expanded hours later in the evening, earlier in the day, in order to catch all the people that want to ride. The service will utilize dedicated running ways, and what you see in this top picture here is a picture of a bus in Eugene, Oregon, that links Eugene and Springfield. This is a bus operating in an exclusive right-of-way where the bus roadway is actually separated from the traveling of the car, so it has more exclusive travel. The exclusive right-of-way can go anywhere from a lane like this that is completely separated to actually operating in mixed traffic with either diamond lanes or operating in the traffic, but then having different kinds of signal preemption that give the bus more of a priority. And you can actually mix the use of exclusive lanes depending on the street characteristics, capacity, and also your right-of-way. So for instance, we might be looking at something like this on Martin Luther King, that where we use exclusive right-of-way from I-40 down to Estes, where you've got right-of-way, and then at Estes, the bus might fold into regular traffic to get the rest of the way downtown.
Steve, when you say signal priority, in other words, so that the bus could force the light to turn green or turn it green sooner to prefer the bus getting through and put the
there are a number of different signal priority systems that can be used. One that we probably wouldn't use is the ability to turn a light from red to green or control the traffic signal. We would probably use a system that would extend the green light so that we're not preempting, but we're extending the green light if we get there in time to take advantage of it.
And we're in the process, I believe, of obtaining federal funds to change over the traffic control signal system, traffic signal control system for all of Chapel Hill and Carrboro. I'm assuming that new technology that we're supposed to be getting in a few years is compatible with this plan. Is that
right? Yeah, you can actually build into your specifications, and Kumar Nepali, I think, is aware of what you have to do, but you can build into your specifications the ability to come back later and add the signal priority system. So another concept is called queue jumping, where you have a bus in a separate lane that pulls up to an intersection, and the light for the bus turns green 2 or 3 seconds before the cars. And instead of the bus being mixed in traffic, then it takes off, passes the cars on the right, and has that 2 or 3 second head start, which can often gain you a lot of time. So there are a lot of different ways that you can show the signal or the give a bus the advantage of traffic, but the idea is that you use the structure of the roadway and technology to give the bus an advantage as it travels. The route structure on BRT is normally more truncated. So what you might see is the large buses operating on the major arterials, and then a totally different service operating in the neighborhoods that brings people out to catch the bus. So sometimes you have to completely rethink the design of the service in your neighborhoods to be compatible with this kind of service. We would upgrade shelters. You'd probably see larger shelters, give them a different look so that people understood that a higher capacity service is operating here. A lot of times what you see in BRT is that the curbs and shelters are actually raised so it functions more like a platform for a rail system. So you don't have curbs to step off of, but they actually line up exactly with the floors of the bus. We would use technology. Things like our next bus system would be much more pronounced and developed as part of the system. They usually involve easy fare. In most systems that operate bus rapid transit, you can purchase your ticket or your fare prior to boarding the bus, which speeds up boarding. Here we've solved that problem. You just don't pay. So,
well, you don't pay directly.
You don't pay the bus driver. And then the service usually has a unique identity so that people understand it and so that you can market it as something that's much more fast than your normal kinds of services. So that's bus rapid transit. I think the corridor that we most likely have recommended that in is the Martin Luther King corridor. And if you've seen our operation that corridor now, we have actually we're actually operating 5 articulated buses, 10 minutes apart on Martin Luther King, with 40-foot buses spaced within 5 minutes intervals in between. And one of the things that we're experiencing now is there's been such a ridership growth that if the we can't keep the buses spaced. We physically don't have the ability to move the buses quickly enough. So one bus gets 2 or 3 minutes behind, all the people from the next bus show up, and that bus is now 10 minutes late, and I've got 2 60-foot buses following each other up and down the street. So, which shows that we've probably reached our max today on Martin Luther King. So this kind of concept really makes sense. We have 2 corridors in town, the 54 corridor and the Martin Luther King corridor. The federal standards say that if you have more than 3,000 daily trips in a corridor, you can justify light rail. We have two corridors right now that exceed the 3,000 by a substantial amount. So the concept of moving to a higher order makes a lot of sense just based on today's traffic numbers. Well,
what percentage of that 54 is in Carrboro? I mean,
The 54 corridor that's so heavy is coming from 40 into campus, from the Friday Center.
But the J route, I thought, was the heaviest used route in the state.
It's the heaviest route that we've got, but in terms of corridors where we've got 3 and 4 operating trips. Services running. We carry probably 4,000 people a day in the Martin Luther King corridor and better than 5,000 a day in the 54 corridor. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, yeah, it's a bunch of people.
That's great.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they're all on my bus.
Sometimes people think so. Where'd they all come from?
As long as they're not all at your stop.
Well, we know there are lots of people living behind all those trees. That's Did you have a question?
No, go ahead.
Okay. This might answer some of your questions about talking about what the service will look like. As David said, the long-range transit plan is developed. It's established a vision that we see of what the transit service will look like in 2035 based on what we know now and the projections we've made for future growth, population, employment, and traffic. But we aren't going to simply snap our fingers and be in 2035. So we have to develop plans to get there. And what we'll do is develop a series of short-range transit plans. And these are plans that lay out a 5 to 7 year plan for how the system will develop and change in order to make various goals, milestones along the way to reach what we think the system ought to look like in 2035. One of the key things to understand about the short-range transit plan is when we do the short-range transit plan, we will also test all the assumptions we made for the long-range transit plan. So there'll be population updates, we'll take a new look at traffic projections, and all of the things that guided the development of the long-range transit plan, because if there's a significant change, then there needs to be some changes and adjustments in the plan. So again, the long-range transit plan kind of paints that picture, but it's going to become much clearer to us as we start to take the incremental looks at how the system's going to develop. And that's why when you said, where will the route be operating in 2035? You know, our first question is, where is it going to be operating in 2015 mm-hmm. or 2020? And we start to do that based on development patterns and how they change and population and work and all of that. The short-range transit plan will be community-wide and start to address the changes in the system, but it'll also be corridor-specific. So we'll be able to take portions of the plan, for instance, Carolina North, where, as that development moves forward, we'll be able to separate the discussion on Carolina North and take a look at that. You'd be able to do the same thing with Carrboro or the 54 corridor. And again, it'll be reviewed and updated regularly. And what we hope to do then with that plan, one of the things that we'll produce each year is a recommendation of service improvements that need to be made the following year that then get included in our budget discussions so that what you're planning actually has an opportunity to happen as we move forward. So these are some of the components of the short-range transit plan. First of all, it's going to have a series of improvements that are developed to meet your goals. Not only the long-range transit plan not where we ought to be, but your goals internally as we're developing the plans. It'll also have a statement of annual costs, both in terms of operating and capital. So it becomes a document that while we develop community-wide, it'll come back to the partners to work through as we start to develop our future capital budgets and our operating budgets. And that's the one-year implementation plan. It'll also have marketing plans, how we intend to make people aware of the system. And it'll test whether or not we're consistent with the long-range transit plan. And then we'll update that on a regular basis. It would be the kind of thing, there'll be an annual update done every year, but from time to time, things will change such that we may have to go back and completely redo the 5 to 7 year section of the plan. So where are we today? We have completed the work on the recommended long-range transit plan, and we now are looking for public input on that plan. Our goal, I'm going to skip ahead, our goal is that by March 2010, the town of Carrboro and the town of Chapel Hill and the university have adopted some kind of a long-range transit plan formally. That's really important because if we decide that we want to move ahead with a higher order of transit, whether it's BRT or something else, we have to be armed with a plan that the community has officially recognized so that we can qualify for more federal funding. So what we'd like to do is engage now in a public discussion about the plan. What do you think? What kind of changes do we need to make? With the hope of coming back here in March and having this body as well as the town of Chapel Hill approve a plan that we then can say we've adopted. At that point, we then begin developing the short-range transit plans, and again, working through the collaborative process with you all and the partners and starting to design the implementation steps. Any questions for either David or I?
Yeah, actually, I have a couple of questions. Uh-huh. With regards to sort of the short-term plan, when you're looking at, say, the plan from 1 year to the next, what is the trigger point for better headways?
Well, usually it is some kind of projection of ridership. And, you know, we'll try to look at what we think the system capacity is, and then based on that capacity, design headways that will ensure that we've got enough capacity to pick up all the people. Most systems operate a concept called 150% of capacity, which means if I've got 100 people riding in an hour, I want to have 60 or 75 seats available in the rest of the folks in the stand. We operate it, can we get them all in the doors?
Right.
On some of our systems.
I get then my next question is, and it may be for either you or David, in terms of connecting Hillsborough to Carrboro or Chapel Hill, have there, when you look at the long range plan, is there any particular goal and more specifically connecting, for example, the courthouse, because the main courthouse is in Hillsborough, and also the community college, the Orange County branch of the Durham Tech. And so.
Well, as David said, our plan is tied in with the regional transportation plan, which includes some kind of discussions about how we provide better regional service connecting Chapel Hill with Hillsborough and Durham and et cetera. As we develop the short-range transit plans, those issues become things that we need to address in that 5 to 7 year plan. For instance, if you look at the long-range plans, there are regional services that are going to hook up Pittsburgh and Hillsborough with the regional rail somewhere in the system. So the question becomes, how do we work with Triangle Transit and Orange County develop services that meet that? So they're all going to, I think all those things will be discussed in the short range, or in the short range transit plan. And they're actually being addressed now as we develop a transit plan for Orange County. And as we start to look at regional collaboration, as we're working with Triangle Transit today, providing service from Hillsborough to Chapel Hill. We just introduced service from Pittsburgh to Chapel Hill, so some of those things are starting to come online.
I have a specific piece of feedback on this plan that I want to put out there, which is for Gateway 8, I think it is, which is the vicinity of Carrboro Plaza Shopping Center. I think, and it's not important to me how you incorporate this into the plan, but more how that we make sure that we leave room to consider a somewhat different possibility. And specifically, what I want to get at is one of the challenges with park and ride in that vicinity is that it's very close to the edge of the University Lake watershed. And so there's not a lot of space for additional parking lots to be built there. Now, it's possible, especially by 2035 or something, it's possible that Carrboro Plaza be redeveloped and that there might be parking decks there. Who knows? But in the nearer term, it doesn't seem likely that we'll be able to eke out all that many more park and ride spaces on the western edge of Carrboro.
Right.
And I think one of the things that we should be looking at as a community is the possibility of jumping over the University Lake watershed and reaching out to with service to a location like at White Cross, where there are a number of underutilized parking lots actually exist presently. And you know, beginning to capture some of those drivers from as far out as White Cross, and so I just want to put that out there as something that I hope you'll incorporate into your thinking. And it's an idea that I've discussed before with the chancellor. I think it also presents a significant economic growth opportunity for the existing businesses and possible future businesses out in the White Cross area too. So
the long range transit plan identified six kind of hubs. but it doesn't necessarily mean that all of the parking has to happen there, but there's kind of a transfer of the numbers counting also.
Right.
And if you look at 15501 corridor now, rather than use Southern Village and Chatham Park and Rides as the only way of accessing transit service, we've now extended 20 miles south into Pittsburgh. We've had plans to consider extending to Graham and Burlington. As you see those services expand and improve, then you see a decrease in the need for
right.
park and ride facilities. Now, one of the things that we've kind of questioned is rail will capture a bigger choice of part of that market than will bus service. So part of the question is, if you start with regional bus service, what kind of market capture are you going to get bringing people, say, from Raleigh to Chapel Hill as opposed to rail?
That's right.
So we really assume that most people, until there's rail, are going to prefer to drive, and we're going to have to figure something else out.
Right.
So that becomes part of the challenge, is how do you make that switch?
And obviously, on the other hand, if gasoline costs $8 a gallon, then
they'll do about anything.
You know,
yep.
people will do what they need to do.
Exactly,
so
right.
We obviously
yeah.
don't have any control
right.
over that.
Yeah, I mean, I take Triangle Trans. I don't take. I drive to the park and ride on Eubanks Road because I don't think there's. I haven't quite figured out how I could take the bus without having to go into town
right.
and then.
That's exactly what would happen.
Right. Right.
Right.
And so. I mean, you
but
know, it's only nine.
I guess the
miles.
Point I'm getting at is, you know, we may not see, you know, looking toward our west, it may not seem that likely that Graham and Burlington and Alamance County are going to step right up and invest money in creating a connection all the way to Carrboro. But, A, we can begin that process
yep.
within Orange County, and B, you know, the price of gas has a big...
Mm-hmm.
Effect on what the level of interest in that is, and certainly only a few years ago, the service that you've now just begun, Steve, from between Pittsburgh mm-hmm. and Chapel Hill was inconceivable,
right.
and I think it's a huge step forward.
It's great.
But
well,
you know,
a third of the university's employees live in Alamance and Chatham County.
They do.
Right.
And that number just keeps growing, so the need to take a real serious look in
right.
that direction.
That's why I'm saying
yeah.
White Cross or whatever. You know, and I guess I picture a park and ride lot at White Cross as being the first baby step in that,
mm-hmm.
in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
But.
Absolutely.
Well, you've got to also encourage people to, I mean, take the bus. I mean, one of the advantages when I look at it from a state point of view is that a lot of the employees that work in our department don't live in Raleigh.
Mm-hmm.
A substantial amount of them either take the bus, or they are those Triangle Transit bus fans, where 10 or 12 people or 15 people are on a bus and they live at a certain place and they drive to a location and then they get on the
mm-hmm.
van and come in. You know, my bus is always full,
mm-hmm.
and you
it's
know. It's a great ride, and you can take a nap, you know. And now it's just actually become a quality of life choice. I would rather be on the bus than drive to work. So, and it's very convenient.
But, Steve, the other, I mean, Mark mentioned Burlington, Alamance, but another big hub, and I don't know how it would fit into this, is what's happening out in Mebane. And
yeah.
whether, I mean, Mebane to UNC has
yep.
become a real major corridor. So I would hope that would be considered as for the rapid bus transit.
Some of these connections, including the idea of reaching out to Alamance or Burlington along the 54 corridor and so forth, is stuff that would come more as an expansion of this of the Triangle
right.
Transit system, creating
right.
more robust Triangle Transit system, obviously, rather than
right.
The current plan. But it is something that I've been meeting with mayors of Chapel Hill and Hillsborough a little bit, and the chair of the county commission about some of those ideas in discussing the potential at some point, who knows when, potential half-cent sales tax for public transportation. So it's, I think it's something these
yep.
guys have thought about.
Those things are on
but it's not
on
in this plan.
Right.
Yeah, not in this plan. Anyway, that's going to be another one. All right. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay. Oh, is, yeah.
Yeah.
Is there
attachment A?
Well, can I ask a question about the resolution?
Yes, ma'am.
Is there a reason why the planning board is not on as one of the, and the reason why I think of the planning board, I'm going to give the basis for
sure
seeking to add them, is because if we want, for example, dedicated bus for BRT on Homestead sometime in 2035, then we might need to think about having a plan for seeking the right-of-way up front as we seek bus stops up front, like we did for, I guess it's Clarendon, too, on the other side.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So that was why... Yeah.
Yeah.
But if it's not, that's fine. I mean, the staff may have a basis. I was just asking that because...
We just didn't, the format we used for that resolution just didn't have a spot for the planning board. But the memo behind the resolution does reference the planning board. So we actually intended. So it's an oversight.
Okay. So add them in there.
Sorry about that.
And I thought we should check the Northern Small Area Advisory Board.
The NTAAC?
Yeah.
Not the, okay. Yes. They just need to be checked, though.
Yeah,
okay.
It wasn't checked.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. Yeah. All right.
Okay, so...
So the art committee...
Is there a motion to, for the resolution marking with NTAAC, the planning board...
Yes, I'll move that. I'll move that.
I'll second.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed. Matter passed unanimously. We now turn to item D4 on our agenda, professional services agreement for transition area design workshop.
Okay. Staff's been assigned the task of refining the implementation of the Northern Small Area Plan and follow up to the board's consideration of recommendations of the Implementation Review Committee. Staff believes that a proactive design workshop or workshops will allow testing of use density, locational information, and the associated infrastructure impacts prior to drafting a particular regulatory framework, and has identified a design team that can assist with this process. A resolution that would authorize the manager to sign agreement with the Durham area designers to assist with this process is recommended for the board's approval. And Chris McGuire passed out some information in response to a question from, or a series of questions from one of our board members, and Trish, you might want to highlight that for the board because that was just handed out tonight, and you've all probably not had a chance to take a look at that.
I don't have a lengthy presentation of slides to show you because for this topic, but
that's okay.
Okay, I thought that was might be your feeling about it, but this is basically following up on the next step in a concept that we provided to you in a memo during the summer about the use of a design workshop for evaluating these recommendations for rezoning strategies because they are fairly particular locations. There are fairly particular locations involved in the Northern Study Area, and this approach will allow us to basically involve the community and property owners and staff and so forth in playing out those recommendations on sites and designing to things that would meet the recommendations, mix of uses, densities, and so forth, and so folks can see what it would look like and what types of elements of those features would be appropriate in a regulatory framework for the rezonings that have been proposed by the recommendations.
Jackie.
Oh, and I didn't answer the questions about the memo, but I can do that too, or outline it. So,
why don't we hear Jackie's question?
Yeah, I noticed that I felt that the timeline was kind of fast, and that there was a plan for notifying property owners like on the 9th or something like that. I would hope that that's done really carefully, and like kind of run by the board first. We don't want people, there are already rumors that we're annexing property and making it go commercial. I don't want anything that would feed
those rumors to be out there. But my other issue is I don't think that we can possibly be ready at the end of October for a charrette, that's not enough lead time. We will have a new board soon. I don't know if we would need to wait for the new board to be sworn in, but I think we should at least wait for the new board to be elected so that all the new members of the board would be able to observe and participate in a charrette. So I'd like us to kind of change the timeline a little bit, along with being very careful of what it is we're telling people we're doing.
Well, I mean, I think, well, I'm fine with moving the charrette. I'm not objecting to that. I suppose it's not really an issue, but more of a comment, that if the board is not serious about, and I don't sound like a broken record, but if the board is not serious about mixed development and commercial development in those areas that remain to be developed,
mm-hmm.
then we should stop now and not waste staff time or our time, new board, old board, and the citizens.
I'm not saying we're not serious about it. I am serious about it. I just know that we have to be very specific and careful in what we say, our plans are, and what we're planning on doing, because things can very quickly and easily be misinterpreted. I don't want anybody thinking that Carver is going to force them to do something with their land. And we have to be really clear in how we approach people, that's not the message people get.
But it had always been our habit for the last least, let's say 99, 10 years since we've been on the board, that we have not imposed any sort of land use change on anybody.
I know.
We have a history of not imposing certain land choices other than maybe you can't have a liquor store somewhere or some sort of noxious. And whatever rumors people are spewing out there, they need to look at what we have done previously. I mean, Carver has been one of the communities, if I have to repeat every time, sometimes I feel like we talk about it too long, but we ask for input from everybody, even those folk that don't live in Carver,
mm-hmm.
that live adjacent to us.
I'm just saying, let's be careful how we phrase this.
I think you're both right.
and I agree. I agree
smart
with that.
Man.
And pretty.
Smart man.
There you go.
I agree with that.
We'll let you live another week.
My question is, so the project, this is kind of following up a little on some of Jackie's concern, I think. The project kickoff meeting, the property owner meeting, who all does that involve? And who all is going to be invited to that? Who all does that involve?
That involves this. I mean, that's a planning staff meeting.
So the project is planning staff.
Yes,
whatever.
It's about going over the scope and the details of the workshop and what information we would, making sure we know what we're talking about, what elements of the what information we need to bring together.
It's like y'all with the group. With
yes,
the other group.
That's right.
And then the property owner meeting. That would be one where you all and or the company that we're contracting with sends invitations to various property owners that might be affected by
yes.
what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that is kind of the one, and maybe
right.
it does seem like that date's coming up a little
soon.
And the first charrette, I'm not in opposition to backing it up just a little, but I've been the one also pushing to say, let's get this rolling this fall. So I'm happy to see it here.
Yeah.
But I understand the cautiousness of what's going on down there.
Yeah, I agree with Jackie and Lydia. Do these property owners know who they are right now?
Some of them we have spoken with, some folks who have followed the NSAPERC process or who've been in contact with us, and we have talked with them about this, but so
some of the property owners are trying to become these property
owners.
And some of them are not.
That's why I'm thinking, mid-October is next week. We really need more lead time so that folks have time to really process and
think about it and make sure it gets on their calendar. Because
well,
I know if somebody
so that,
was...
Yeah, and so that we have adequate time to really properly publicize
it. I just would hate anyone to feel like they're caught off guard. We've taken so much time to get to this point. A little more time and a lot more information out to folks that this is what the plan is,
and
I think,
to
is wise.
About who the property owners are. I don't want to get a call from somebody and not know what.
Okay, well, so let me ask this question. Do you think that this proposal needs to be revised and brought back to us, or do you think we just need to probably adopt, more or less adopt this proposal, but with instructions to staff to give it a little bit longer timeline.
Give it a little bit more a longer timeline, and I want to feel more comfortable about who they're telling, who is being told what.
Well, you know, I would hope that the property records in the Register of Deeds would indicate who owns the property, and therefore, it has been. I mean, we know if you look at the map. You see that little yellow and a little bit of that, I don't know, olive drab. Those would be the people that you would contact.
Right. I'm just worried that somebody's going to think that they're being told that they have to change what their property is.
Okay.
And that. Yeah. So anyway, I'm just, please caution. I'd like to see the letters before you send them out.
I don't have to see them. don't send me any.
I hear the point, and I think the staff does too, hear the point you're making, Jackie, and it's certainly, we've run into this before, that people get the wrong impression about some of the
But in terms of what Trish is asking, you know, what kind of timeline are we talking about? What can we say back to Trish in terms of how we would modify?
I would suggest that if you're going to do the design workshops, do them in January and February, because people are not going to be paying attention in November
December.
And December, because they'll be thinking about Thanksgiving,
right.
Hanukkah,
right.
Christmas, right. End of the year. That would be my suggestion.
And they go to town.
Nobody right. has, after January, unless you spend too much on Christmas, you can focus on this, because you're not going to be going outside, and if you don't put it on a basketball night when Carolina's playing, you'll get a lot of participation.
You're such a wise woman.
I take that.
It's just being, you know, it's just,
I take that as a motion.
I'll second that motion. Yeah, that's a good motion
for this resolution without further instruction to the staff. And it's been seconded. So all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed. Matter passed unanimously. Thanks very much. As several people have said, this is a priority for this board. We appreciate you doing this. Okay. I would like to request that we have a super brief executive session to discuss a litigation matter. Is there a motion for that?
So moved.
I'm sorry.
Is that Keeley?
Yes. Town Carver versus Keeley.
Can I, before we go into
yes, ma'am.
Closed session, I can't even remember now, so it must not have been that important. So let's just keep on going. It'll come to me later, and we'll just have to.
But when we get back out of closed session,
listen,
you could bring it up.
Yeah.
All right.
So moved. Second.
Then moved and seconded, we go into executive session. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed. Matter passed unanimously.
Okay. Thank you.